All right, good afternoon. Let us learn. Let's learn a little bit. So we are in Parshas Vayetzeh. We're going to be picking up on page 148 in your Chumash, page 148. So let's but I want to share with you, we'll pick up the story, do a quick review. What I'd like to learn together this morning is a Medrash. It's a Medrash Rashi quotes, and what I'd like to learn together is how we can see a Medrash on its surface level. We can see it almost as a child's tale, and then I want to study with you the comment made by the Maharal, who unpeels some layers and just gives us a different perspective on what exactly is going on. So that's my cryptic introduction. But let's get into the story. So the story which picks up, and we actually learned last week what we studied in depth, was the end of Yaakov stealing the blessings from his brother Esav, and how as a result of that, Esav hated Yaakov. As a result of that, Yaakov and Esav's mother, Rivka, sends Yaakov out and says, if you remember, she says to Yaakov, you got to get away from your brother. And she says to her husband, to Yitzchak, he needs a wife. And since the place everybody knows, where do you get yourself a good Jewish wife? You go back to Charan, you go back home, you go back to the place where you're from. Of course, everybody knows that. That's why everybody comes back here to Montreal, you know, so they find their spouses and they settle. So he goes to Charan. Who's in Charan? His uncle, Lavan. His mother, Rivka's brother, Lavan. And that's where we left off last week's parsha. Our parsha begins as he goes. He has the famous dream. He's on his way. He goes to sleep. He has the ladder. The angels are going down. The angels are going up. And he makes there a vow. We can discuss this in greater length in future years. Mirtz Hashem, he makes a vow in which he says, Hashem, if you will protect me, you will grant me everything that I need, you will be a God to me, then I will certainly serve you, and I will give you Asera Asrenulach, I'll give you a tenth of everything that I have. He builds a Mizbeach, all the 12 stones become one. It's a whole episode there, the dream with the angels, Jacob's ladder, famous ladder of his dream. And then he continues on his way. He's got a mission. His mission again is, he's got to get to his uncle Lavan in order to find himself a wife. That's what his father told him to do, and he was going to listen. And that's where our story picks up. We're going to do this part in the beginning of chapter 29, Perikhov Tess, on page 146. This is still, we're just going to do this quickly as we get to the point that we want to learn. He sees a be'er, and there are a couple of flocks sitting there by the be'er. There's a large stone. He has a conversation. I think we did this in a previous year. He has a conversation with the shepherds. He asks them, my brothers, he says to them, where are you guys from? And they say, we're from Charan. He says, amazing, do you know my uncle Lavan? And they say, we do. Yaakov says to them, is everything well with him? And they say, indeed it is. Not only that, but here comes his daughter, Rachel. She was a shepherdess. And then he comments to them and he says, hey, why are you guys lounging around? It's still the middle of the day. You should be shepherding and giving your flocks to drink. And they say, we can't because not all the flocks are here. And this large stone is here. And then the Torah says, Yaakov pops off the stone like it was a little nothing. And he gives them to drink. And that's where we will pick up from. Now, there's much to talk. I think we spoke about in previous year some of that. So, like, why is this story here? Why does he give them Musar? He rebukes them for lounging around, as is almost like his introductory statement. Either way, let's pick up from Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Page 148. Odenu midaberim. So he's talking with the shepherds. V'rachel ba'ayim atzon asher la'avia ki ro'ahi. And Rachel now shows up. So he had seen her off in the distance. He was clearly inspired physically to be able to move with great strength this great stone. And now she approaches. Vayehi. And now he already knows who she is. She does not know who he is. There's a stranger standing by the well. But he's already been told that this is the daughter of his uncle Lavan, who he's going to meet. When he sees Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Lavan, yes, son Lavan Achimo, and he sees that his uncle, she's a shepherdess, he moves a stone, like I mentioned, and Vayashk es tzon Lavan, and he gives the flock to drink. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, then he kisses her. Vayisa es kolo vayefk, and then he cries. Very romantic introduction. He sees her the first time. First he gives her a kiss, And then he cries. Why is he crying? So Rashi comments, he makes two comments which we need for a little bit later, but we'll learn them now because of it will foreshadow what's relevant to us. Says Rashi, Vayev, in the bottom of the first column, if you want to follow me inside, Rashi says two reasons. Number one, Shetzipa beruach hakodesh einu nichnesas imo lekvura. He saw that they're not going to be buried together. That as he has this moment in which they're meeting now for the first time, this is a very Jewish thing, right? Right away, he's already thinking future, but he's not just thinking future, marriage, children, where are we sending them to school? He's already thinking, are we going to be buried together or not? It's like that's already. So he sees, because he knows in Maras HaMachpelah, which we've mentioned a number of times already in previous weeks, there was space there for Avraham and Sarah. Yitzchak and Rivka, his grandmother and grandfather, his mother and his father, and then it was him and only one, which is going to be Leah. See, he saw already, right away, that they weren't going to be buried. That's a midrashic approach as to why is he crying. That's not the simple meaning of the text. This is already that he's seeing that this was not. Now again, Chazal are not saying, I think... not just on the simple level, they're not going to be buried together, but in that this would not be an eternal match, that he perceived in this meeting that it would be for this world, and then often it's, and then to lay in eternity, but that was not going to be. There was something missing, and that brought out his tears. And then Rashi says, on a more pshat level, why is he crying? He doesn't have anything to give her. Here he shows up. He'd like to court this young lady to offer him, to try to offer something to take her hand in marriage, and he's empty-handed. And then Rashi fills in, why is he empty-handed? So Rashi fills in that he left home. Certainly his father sent him with goods, but along the way, Esav sees that he's getting away, and Esav sent his son Eliphaz to kill Yaakov on the way. Because again, that's why he was running away at the end of the day from the great hatred that Esav had. Eliphaz, Rashi quotes from the Medrash, caught up with Yaakov and indeed wanted to kill him, but then he ran into a problem. He had cognitive dissonance, as we would say in our more modern language. Eliphaz is Esav's son, which means who's his grandfather?
Yaakov.
His grandfather would be Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak, and his great-grandfather is Avram. So he comes from a pretty strong lineage. Grew up in the house of Yitzchak Avinu. This Yaakov is his uncle. So he said, I'm stuck. I have a command from my father to kill you. Problem is, I can't. Because at the end of the day, I'm a grandson of Yitzchak Avinu, a great-grandson of Avram Avinu, and you're my uncle, I can't do it. What should I do? He poses this halachic question to his uncle Yaakov. Should I do? I'm stuck. Kibbut Av Aim tells me I have to kill you. I want to honor my father. Esav was well known for Kibbut Av Aim. So Yaakov said to him, I know what to do. You'll take all of my goods. You'll take all of my possessions. You'll leave me completely penniless and destitute. And a destitute, penniless person is chashuv kemes, is viewed as if he's already not here in the world. He can't sustain himself, he can't support himself, he has nothing. So you'll halachically fulfill the two. You won't kill me, but you'll leave me in a place that I am as if I've been removed from this world, and that's what he did. So Yaakov shows up to the well, and what does he have? He has the staff that's in his hand, that's it, he's got nothing. So on a simple level, Rashi says he cries. He sees Rachel, and he cries. On a midrashic level, he sees for all of eternity that he won't be buried next to her. And on a pshat level, he cries because he's empty-handed. Now, he's not just empty-handed, but he knows the family history. What happened? How did his father find his mother? How did Yitzchak find his mother, Yaakov's mother, meaning his wife's Rivka? That was a story we learned about a couple weeks ago, that Eliezer, the servant of Avram, also went to a well, also came to find the woman that would marry his master's son, Yitzchak. But what did he come with? Big time gifts. He had all of the camels, and he's only with gifts, and he shows up at the house, and he's got all of these presents for everybody. He came with great wealth. And that was actually one of the things that he said. He said, when Eliezer sits down at the table with Bisuel, and who was at that table, by the way?
Lavan.
Little Uncle Lavan, who was a little boy at the time. And he comes and he says, my master's been blessed with great wealth. Behold, here it is. And he gave Rivka, the daughter, the rings and the bracelets and all of these things. So Eliezer came with great wealth in order to woo Rivka to come and marry Yitzchak. And now the next generation, Yaakov is there, not with a servant with camels, not with a servant with gold rings and bracelets. He's there by himself with a staff in his hand. He's got nothing. So he cries. Okay. Let's leave that at that. There's more to discuss on the Medrash, but for our purposes today, let's leave it at that. Vayaged Yaakov, Pasuk Yud Beis 12, Vayaged Yaakov L'Rachel Ki Achi Avihu. Now after kissing her, after crying, he now tells her who he is. That they're cousins, that her father Lavan is his mother Rivka, their brother and sister. Vatarites Vataged Lavia. So she runs to tell her father, to tell her father, Lavan, that this guy Yaakov has just showed up. Now, Yud Gimel 13, Vayehi Kishmoa Lavan Eshemo Yaakov Ben Achoso. When Lavan hears just the name, he hears the news that Yaakov, his nephew, has arrived. Vayoratz Likraso. He runs to greet him. Vayichabeklo, and he hugs him. Vayinasheklo, and he kisses him. Vayivieuel beso, and he brings him to his home. Vayisaper lelavones kol advarim ha'ela, and then Yaakov tells to Lavan all the things that have gone on. Okay, let's put the brakes on and take a look at this pasuk. What reaction should we expect when Lavan hears that his nephew Lavan, Yaakov, has showed up?
Dollar signs.
Okay, right? You all got it. He's excited because you know he's seen this story before. Last time it was at his father's house regarding his sister, and someone from the family of Avram shows up with great wealth in order to marry the daughter, and instead of the old traditional, the daughter is presented a dowry by her father to send her. In this case, pretty progressive, right? It was the guy's side that's coming with the great wealth. And now he sees the story repeating itself. He's got two daughters. He's got Leah and Rachel. And now Yaakov shows up. So he's excited. Now, how does the Torah describe his excitement? What does he do? Okay, so Vayoratz Likraso. He runs after him. Excellent. Excellent. Somebody said it. We'll see it inside. He runs. Now, whenever you have in the Torah of Vayoratz a running, there's always a reason that inspires running. It's a great lesson in life. Whenever there's a running, we run for a purpose. Meaning, in general, I don't want to say we sleepwalk through life, but I guess one could say that if one wanted to be cynical. But we go through life, we meander through, we do our thing. Ritzutz, always requires energy. By definition, we are our point of our standard point of existence is doing nothing, inertia. We don't move. We need energy of activation to get us moving. To run requires an additional element of running, which is why, by the way, what's the root of the word la roots? The letters of that spell. Ratz or ratzon. What's ratzon? It's a will or a desire. Because if you want to know what a person's inner desire is, what their will is about, what they really care for or care about, so just look at what do they run for? What gets them moving? What are they really, you know, a person who runs to make sure they don't miss the previews of the film that they're going to watch, and they watch six different previews. They run to get there, not to miss a minute, but can show up 40 minutes late to a shir or to shul. So you see, what gets them running? Well, you know, what causes where's the inner desire that I can't miss this, but I can't miss that? So in general, the roots to run is an expression of ratzon, because without ratzon, we don't do anything. We'll just sit. You need something that really Pradza. Actually, I just read this week, Revolba, Shlomo Revolba, who we've quoted many times, passed away 13 years ago in Eretz Yisrael, one of the great leading Ephesus, Bali Machshava, one of the philosophers. So he writes that in order, he's really quoting the Chazon Ish, who's lived in the early 20th century in Israel, who writes that we on our own have two choices in front of us. He says all of our midos, all of our character development is really based on two simple choices. Do we want our exalted desire or our mundane desire to win out? Those are the two choices. Everything stems from that. A person who wants to be exalted, uplifted, spiritual, or a person who wants to be mundane, natural, and earthly. And the Regesh Hamusari, he calls it, and the Regesh Hata'avani, the desirous feeling and emotions that we have versus the more spiritual ones. And the way that he writes it is, he says, on our own, we will naturally become, and he uses a beautiful poetic language, beautiful Ba'alei Kas, beautiful people who get angry. Beautifully Balgava Mitsuyanim, haughty people, exceptional haughty people. And he brings a number of examples in which he describes, that happens on its own. You don't have to work on becoming angry at people when they do things wrong. You don't have to like sit down and say to yourself, today, I'm really going to give it to the next person who cuts me off. And you work on it, and you think about it, and you plan, and then you carry it through. It just is. If you don't watch yourself, if you don't rein yourself in, if you don't pay attention, you don't work on yourself, we naturally just become all the ills of society. It's we have to energize ourselves to work against that, to become Bali Midas Tovas, to become people of exceptional character and development. So all of that is said, Vayorat, Salavan runs, which means we right away have to say, what's driving that? Why is he running? Okay, fine. Why is he running? So the Torah says, Vayichaviklo, after he runs, he hugs him. Vayinashiklo, and he kisses him. So you say, great. I know why he's running. Why is he running? He loves him. That's what it says. He loves him. He gives him a hug. He gives him a kiss. He brings him into his home. It's obvious why he's running, because he loves him. Now, Rashi and the sages pick up on, as you are all commenting already, not so fast. We have a history with love, and we know a couple of episodes with him already. And Rashi says as follows, and I want to share with you Rashi, which again, some of you have already just alluded to. It's the last three lines on the page in Rashi, if you want to read it inside with me. He thought he must have brought money and great wealth with him. Shahare Eved Habayiz Balakon, the servant of this household came. And what did he come with a few years back? 10 camels laden with goods. And now I have the grandson himself. The Enochol himself is coming. If the Eved came, the servant came, for sure. He looks around and what does he see?
Nothing.
Now, everybody knows there are lots of ways to carry wealth. Sometimes you carry wealth with camels. Sometimes you carry wealth in other ways. So, Vayichaviklo, so he hugged him, says Rashi. Kishelo Royim Okum, he didn't see anything. Amashem Zehuvim Hevi, he brought gold, coins, or stones, Vihinam Becheiko, and they are in his
clothes.
In his clothes, and is literally in his lap, in his belly. And so he gives him a hug. Why does he give him a hug?
Feel him out.
And then he kisses him. So the Torah tells us all these things. He ran, he hugged, and he kissed. Why do I need to know all these details? Says Rashi from Chazal the Medrash. Well, each one, he ran to see what he would get. Nothing. He hugged. Maybe he's got something on his body. He kisses him. Says Rashi. Shema Margoliot Hevi Vehein Befiv. He has precious stones, and he hid them in his mouth. One second. Hold on. I want to share with you how to learn a medrash. All right. So far, so good. Right. We're reading it. So we have the simple level of pshat in the pasuk that he ran, he hugged, and he kissed him. And Yaakov, the pasuk concludes, told him everything that happened. So we write. So we could read it very simply that he ran and he hugged him and he kissed him. He loves him. Sages say, I'll buy it. He ran to see what he would get. He hugged him to see if he had anything on his body. And he kissed him to see maybe he's hiding something in his mouth. Last pasuk, one second, hold on. Vayisafir lelavan, and then the pasuk says, and then Yaakov told him everything that happened. Why after that he ran, and he hugs, and he kisses, why, what does it mean Yaakov told him everything that happened? Rashi says, Shelo boil, and he took ones achid, that he only ran not from a place of power, but he ran because his brother wanted to kill him. And that along the way, all of his money was taken from him. So Yaakov senses what's going on over here. And he senses the pat down at the airport. And he says, I don't have anything on me. I don't have anything. And he said, tells him all that happened. Okay. One more plus thing, and I want to go back. Vayomer lelavan, ach atzmi uvisari ata ne'ach. Ach, Artscroll translates it here based on Rashi. Like nevertheless. No, All right. Nevertheless, you have nothing, but right, your family, come, you'll stay with me for a little bit. Like, ach, and that word ach is just expressed all of the disappointments when you think you're going to have this big boon, and then it's gone. And it's expressed in ach, the disappointment. I have to tell you, I had. Oh man, I reserve the right to share this at some other point. I have when we moved from Atlanta, so I cleared off my computer of all the files. I had all tons and tons of files, so I cleared them out, so I could bring them here. So, you never know when you're going to need your stuff. So I asked somebody to put it all in a Dropbox file for me. And so the person, computer guy, came, I'm sure for him it was like 2 seconds. He put it all in a file, sent me the link. And now I have it whenever I want to go back and go through all the files that are on my computer. Really all that I cared about were my files from my notes of all this, the drushes and sermons that I gave. And I had a special folder that I would write in shorthand notes, like I still do, just what I spoke about so I would remember, did I speak about this already? Did I not? What did I say? So I have them all. That's all that I really, really, really wanted. And as soon as I got here, and I went to the Dropbox, I went to the file, all of those files, they're all headed, on Brachos and Shmos, they're all empty.
Oh,
every other file I have, all these ridiculous files of like programs we ran that are irrelevant, that I never need, and the one thing that I cared about, gone. Empty, every single one. And in place of the file are pictures, like random pictures, I can't figure out why, gone. So I mourned for a few days, and then, okay, they're gone. Start over. Like, that's the way it's going to be. Like, what am I supposed to do? The files are gone. The computer was, an old computer was destroyed. Like, it's just gone. It's two and a quarter years later. My son says to me on Sunday night, this week, Sunday night, he says, you know, I have this USB port that has stuff of yours on it. Now, I'm setting this up for you, but I'm like, all right, like, well, USB port. I once used USB ports from files. I remember I once had something, whatever it was. He said this to me once or twice before. This Sunday night, he says it again. He says, I was sitting at the computer at home. He says, let me give it to you, and you'll see what's on. Fine. He brings it down. He plugs it in. And lo and behold, there are my files. Because I only cared about that, already on my own, cleared that off of my old computer, put it on a USB port, and then I said, you know what, instead of just taking this, I asked, this must be what had happened, I asked my buddy, clear off everything else, but I had already, these few files I did on my own. So here I am, I'm literally overjoyed. I tackle him because, you know, little, like, teenage boys don't like to be kissed, but that's their problem. So I tackle him, and I'm like, I can't believe you are holding on to this for 2 years. This is what I've been looking for. I tell him the whole story of I downloaded the whole thing. I look, it's gone. I gave up on it. I'm never going to see him again. And it's been sitting in your room the whole time. And I can't believe it. This is amazing. He says, well, I need the USB port, so let me transfer it to your computer. Great. Sitting there, and he's blah, 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 blah. He's like moving, like, you know, sometimes you're watching somebody and you think they're working too fast, but like, all right, the next generation, like, he's already the generation after me. He knows his computer stuff. He's doing this, he can't, this is not working, that's not working. He sort of gets stuck on something, he's trying to fix it, and I'm getting nervous because something's not working, and he's trying to move this to there. Finally, he does it. And then he had it on his thing. He was trying to delete it from here to move it to there. And guess what he did? Yes! He deleted. all the files. True story. This happened Sunday night. I'm sitting there. I'm like, 10 minutes ago, I'm like on the floor. I had tackled him because he had brought me what I had been missing earlier. And then he deleted the whole thing.
But he didn't delete the delete.
You know, it's
somewhere.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's not. We tested it. It's gone. So we had to look. So we're sitting there, and he's like, uh-oh. He's like, I'm like. So I said, well, listen, I didn't know it was here 10 minutes ago. And I was doing just fine. So I had 10 minutes of ecstasy. Like, I got all my files back. And now I'm back to where I started. It's all good. It's all good. So he was so distraught. So he went online. He figured out a way that for $40, you can buy a program that brings back all the stuff. Which he did,
yes.
But it brings back everything that's ever been on the. He has like 600 files now that he has to sift through to find the ones that we want. So again, he's got nothing to do anyway at night because he doesn't get any homework. So he'll figure out. But until he figured that out, which was 2 hours later, he was much more despondent than me. He was like, "Oh, I thought I had it, and that was great." And then, anyway, but I'm back to where I was. I like it. But the expression. Why am I telling you all this? Besides, it's a great story. And it will be, and you know what he said to me? He said, oh no, I'm going to be a drusha now. That was literally that was his first thought. I just deleted your drushas. I'm going to be the next drusha. Ah, yeah. That's all my kids, their only goal in life is not to do something to be a drusha. That's like it. Like, that's they're like happy. Like every week that goes by and they weren't the drusha, they're a success. So I said for sure. If you deleted all my drushas, you're for sure gonna be the next drusha. Okay, so maybe a Wednesday chumashir will count for him. I don't know. Does it count? Anyway, so Lavan says, ah, like here was, I thought I just won the lottery. Because you just showed up. And already before I got there, I'm already imagining your grandfather's servants came with great riches. The grandson himself, and I have the daughters. This is going to be a boon. And then you find out, you search. Ah.
Never.
Right? So then it's that right from, you know, this like, so I told the story like I was like the big hero, like, I never, but I can tell you those first couple seconds are like, no way that just happened. Like I just, you watch, here it is, and now it's gone. It just disappeared. So he says, ach, that's me, at least, okay, no, what am I going to do with you, okay? I'm not going to send you out, you come work. Okay. So Rashi quoted the Medrash. Why does he hug and he kiss him? So Rashi says he's searching him. Now we can learn that Medrash on a simple level, as we basically discussed, which means if we have to say, like, what did he do? He patted him down. First, he felt his rib cages to see if he's hiding anything, and then he gives him a kiss to sort of see maybe he's got something in his mouth. We could read the Medrash like that, right? I want to share with you a comment from the Maral. Comment from the Maral expresses when you learn Medrash, some midrashim are meant to be taken literally, and others are not. Chazal and the Medrash, sometimes they literally want to express what happened in a very literal sense. And sometimes it's not necessarily literal. They're trying to convey a message. Now, here, we don't have to worry about that. We know it's literal on some level because the pasuk says he hugged him, and we know that happened. So the Medrash expresses, well, he's trying to feel him out to see what he's got. Let me share with you this Maral. Says Maral. I'll read a little bit and translate. Nira Shirot Salomar, what does this Medrash want to say? That he hugged him and then he kissed him. Says the Medrash. Ki makom hacheik hu beseser yoser. Person can bring wealth in several different ways. One is, here it is, guys. I'm wealthy. How do you bring wealth in that manner? You bring camels, you bring treasures, you bring things that when you walk through town, you say, I'm a big man. I got the goods. I got the goods. And I want everybody to know that I got the goods. And then there's another way to carry wealth. And that way to carry wealth is in which not everybody knows that you have wealth, but who does? Your circle of friends knows that you have money. So, but you don't want to flaunt it. You're not interested in whatever reason, whether it's because you're a tzaddik, whether or not because you're afraid. I don't care. I'm not here to let everybody know what I have. So what do? You hide it. How do you hide it? So there are different ways of hiding one's wealth. But however you do that, you only let a certain circle know that you have what you have. Says the Maharal. First he runs to see him. Lavan runs to see Yaakov. He wants to see, does he have the goods? He doesn't see anything. So he says, well, I'm sure he has it. So what do I need to do to get it? So he hugs him. Now, we read that on a simple level, like to sort of feel. Says the Maharal, maybe he has it in his chayk, in his bosom, on his being, on his body, which is not as open as my camels. It's hidden on my body somewhere. She'ein nir, you can't see it. V'ka'asher hu mechabek oso, and when he hugs him, asu mitdabek bo legamre. What is a hug? A hug is a sense of closeness. He's saying, we're close. You're my nephew. I love you. What's the goal of the hug?
To bite him.
Not to feel him out and pat him down like he's at the airport. To say, to show, we're close. And what do people who are close do? Correct. And through the hug, Yaakov will feel close back to him. He won't hide it from him. Of course, Yaakov, I know you don't want to walk around through town with camels and sparkling gold. You don't want to do that. But we're close. We're family. I'm the inside. See, he hugs him. But he doesn't get anything of Yaakov. Not on the simple level like he patted him down and didn't feel anything. Yaakov reveals nothing to him. So what does he then do? Kisses him. When the sages say, well, maybe it's in his mouth. We can learn that simply by saying he hid jewelry in his mouth. Says the Maharal, Chazal is saying more than that. What does it mean when Chazal say, well, maybe it's in his coat pockets, maybe it's on his body, and then they say maybe it's in his mouth? What are they doing? They're progressing from here are my camels to maybe it's in my clothing, to it's in my mouth. It's deep inside of who I am. It's a deeper level of, I'm not going to share this, not even with my circle. This is only my deeper, innermost, closest. That's it. So how does Lavan get to that? So he tries to give him a kiss. The mouth is more hidden, more secret, more private than the body. It's literally inside of a person. And then through the kiss, he's trying to pull Yaakov towards him to say, we are as close as can be. Which is completely hidden. And therefore, you will reveal to me what you have. Now, I want to share, because I'm just sharing what the Maharal is pointing out in the Medrash. Again, we can read it, like Michael and my children can read the Medrash. They can say, oh, first he hugged him, and then he kissed him, because maybe Yaakov hid it in his pocket. Maybe here, Maharal is saying, no, Chazal is saying something much deeper. He's looking for wealth, not necessarily that he has it on him, but that it's there, that it exists. And you don't necessarily flaunt it, it's closer. He wouldn't, I hug you, we're close, right? Oh, not that, that's not close enough. I'll give you a kiss, because the mouth represents the inner recesses of a person. I want to be in there, I'm that close, tell me what you got. But Yaakov gives him nothing. Now, says the Maharal, what language does the Torah describe between Hashem and the Jewish people? When the Torah wants to describe the relationship between the Torah that Hashem gave us. Two psukim, one you're familiar with, one which is a little bit less familiar. The first, which is less familiar, the pasuk says in Mishle, Ki Hashem yitain chachma, Hashem gives wisdom, mipiv, from his mouth. Da'as utvuna, wisdom and understanding. Where does the chachma of Hashem come from? Mipiv. So we could simply say, yeah, Hashem gives him half from his mouth because he's speaking it. Says Maral, it's a little deeper than that. What does it mean to give wisdom from your mouth? It means to give over your innermost, deep secrets, private elements that you have that are yours alone and that you only share with those closest to you. Hashem gives his chachma mipiv. Similarly, we read every year Shir HaShirim, Pesach time. How does Shir HaShirim begin? So the book of Shir HaShirim, which is written by Shlomo HaMelech, which is allegorical. The whole Megillah, we translated. Art Scroll writes in their translation, we're not even going to translate this literally, because it literally would read like a love novel between a husband and a wife, but it's describing the love between Hashem and the Jewish people, and all the phrases are taken to mean allegorical understandings. It opens up, Yishakeni minishikus pihu. Literally would mean, kiss me with the kisses of your mouth. Which Chazal understand to mean, This is how Art Scroll would translate based on the allegory. What's the allegory of kiss me with the kisses of your mouth? Communicate your innermost wisdom to me in loving closeness. Says the Maral, because that's what it means. Kiss me with the innermost kisses of your mouth is the closest you can be. Give me that which comes from within. Share that with me. Says the Maral, that's what Chazal are saying when love runs. He's driven by something. He's driven by the desire for wealth. And he doesn't see it. So he hugs. Not just feeling his body. We're close. Share it with me. It's not enough. He kisses. That's even deeper. I want to be that close. What do you have? Yaakov says, I don't have anything. I'm not giving you anything. But the meaning behind it is not just the simple understanding, communicating the idea, yishakeni minishikus piu. That is the same way that we find the psukim in Mishlei and Shir HaShirim describing the Torah that we're learning coming from the mouth of Hashem in the form of a kiss to us. Give me your innermost wisdom. Don't hold it back. Give me what you have. That's the essence of who you are. That's what I want. And there is no greater expression between the love of Hashem and the Jewish people than that. Referenced in Lavan running after Yaakov and giving him a kiss. And Chazal seeing the Medrash, that idea buried behind that. So I just wanted to share that as Yaakov shows up with love. Okay, I wish you all a wonderful day. Look forward to seeing you next week. Beautiful. Thank you. Very nice.